SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From beautiful Belmont Park? Is that what we're going to go with? From chilly, damp around the gills? Yeah, you're live with Dave Grenig of the Daily Racing Form. Welcome to Belmont Week.
Happy Columbus Day to you.
Unbelievable. Who's lining up for the cigar mile Monday? What the hell?
It's definitely not have the Belmont feel to it just yet, but they say the warmth is on the way.
Well, I got here yesterday, and in fact, Gary and I were having dinner, and we were talking about the week, and I pulled up the forecast for Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It had shown nothing but cold and miserable and raining. And actually, it's moderated. And Saturday now is showing a sunshine logo. So at least we can look forward to Saturday.
I think the forecast I've seen is actually pretty decent for the rest of the week.
Good.
There's a chance of some thunderstorms, but there's also a chance to not have thunderstorms. So, when you say this, when a weather forecaster goes, there's a 50% chance of rain. Well, I'm going to go with the glass half full and say there's a 50% chance not rain.
That's so you.
That's all me. Mr. Positive.
That's you. Right. That is so you.
But after this past weekend, I think we've had enough of the rain.
Wow.
Unfortunately, off the turf again at Belmont for New York Showcase, Big Apple Empire, whatever they're calling it these days. Unfortunately, those races are off the turf, the Kingston and the Mount Vernon. So, unfortunately, that's three straight days of no turf racing.
Nothing you can do. But the good news is, certainly, for the kinds of races, in fact, coming up Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Yesterday, they drew the Thursday card, including the Wonder Again and the Intercontinental. The good news is the turf courses needed this, and not just in New York. In Maryland and anywhere else there's a turf course on the Eastern Seaboard, this was overdue.
No question. Definitely. I think we ran 102 turf races and two off from the beginning of the meet until this past Friday. So now I think we're 102 on, and we had the four today, 13, about 15 off. So we're still running a healthy amount of grass races.
Yeah, you can't complain too much. And it certainly didn't affect that double carryover payoff of 36,000 on Saturday.
Yesterday. I think that was
track of times
by the first career victory of Omar Moreno, not the baseball player, who, by the way, going into that race yesterday, had one career mount. But if you went on Equibase, he showed that he did not actually exist. So I thought it was one. I thought that was his first mount, and now he's 1-for-3.
Too close. There you go. He works at the deli across the street.
Yes, really?
Oh yeah, yeah. He works at.
I heard he graduated from Belmont High School.
Yeah, no, he's a local kid, and is it Dave? I think right that runs Talk of the Town across the way, and he's taken over all the track kitchens.
Right.
Big and a big upgrade on that front. Yesterday, the double carryover. Also contributing to that was the 993rd career victory
for
Gary Siaka. He and he's trying to keep pace with Keneally. Keneally's going to hit the 1,000 first.
I think so.
Well, the good news is we've got a terrific week of racing. They're going to draw the Friday card, which, of course, is going to include the New York and the Gold Cup, the Tremont, the True North, and the Better Roses. Going into the weekend and all those two-day bets that we talked about last week and the Belmont Stakes itself, let's get an update, Dave, because the field lost Midnight Bourbon midweek last week, and we do have some international flavor between Rebels Romance, who that workout had caught my attention last week.
Yeah, it was a pretty good work. I didn't have a major issue with it. I guess my question regarding Rebels Romance is how good is he? I mean, I don't know that he ran a visually good looking race in the UAE Derby March 27th. Hasn't run since. The only feel that I've got for that race is the seventh place finisher in that race was France Gaud Aina, who came back and ran seventh in the Preakness and didn't really impress me. So, again, I didn't delve through the Rebels, what other horses from that race have done. I like the fact that Charlie Appleby, the trainer, got him here early and got him acclimated, and he took about 2 weeks to get him to that point. A little awkward training regimen in terms of three workouts in 8 days, but I'd say the first one, the first two were almost like glorified gallops, or at least the first one anyway. And then he's, the last workout was a little bit more serious, and it was fine. I just, I guess, again, my question is, how does he class up? Because I actually think this, the top half of this race is solid, with Essential Quality and Hot Rod Charlie and Ron Bauer and, Rock Your World and Known Agenda. I mean, five of the nine horses that we know of, for sure. I'll get to Keep Me in Mind in a minute. I'll put it this way. This is a better field to me than the Preakness.
That's not unfair at all. And, of course, the return to action in the Triple Crown sequence of Rock Your World and Hot Rod Charlie and Essential Quality go a long way. And we haven't even gotten to the Pletcher Trio. And I answered somebody on Twitter over the weekend. And I said, they said, who are you interested in? And I said, you're not going to argue with Ron Bauer as favorite. But, I was interested in Rebel's Romance. And I take Todd especially seriously in this race. He's got a tremendous feel. His record in it, for all the grief he takes about his Derby record, his Belmont record is outstanding. And one or more of those horses will run well on Saturday.
I don't disagree. I think Known Agenda is the one that you're probably the most interested in.
I'm more interested in Overtook.
Okay.
Curlin out of that nice AP Indy mare.
Okay.
No?
Doesn't work for me, but I don't see a race. I'll say this, Steve, and maybe you see it differently. I don't see a race on his form that makes him competitive in this field.
But isn't that true of a lot of horses that have run well historically?
I would take Bourbonic over him.
All right.
In terms of a horse-for-horse wager, maybe for the next egg bagel with cream cheese that you so graciously brought to me this morning. But look, I'm typically wrong in this race. So, and this race, look, you have to go back. I think I looked this up. Forget last year. Without a Triple Crown on the line, the last favorite to win this race in a regular format was a Fleet Alex in, 06, I think
Wow.
it was. So
wow.
You can come up with, there's a lot of wacky results in this race. So I'm not going to talk you off anything in this race. I'm not going to talk anybody off anybody in this field. I just, as I handicap it, I don't see a race that Overtook has that really gets me excited to put money on him. But like I said, we've had some wacky results in this race.
Let's run these down for everybody. Ron,
let me just talk.
Go
before
ahead.
We do
this, yes, keep
so
me in
this
mind.
This morning, keep me in mind is here. He worked out of the gate this morning in 46-4, and I didn't particularly like the work. Yeah, the time is going to be fast. You're going to have nothing else to compare it to, but he still has gate issues. He was very hesitant coming out of the gate, and then he sort of jumped in the bridle and sort of, blitzed around there in 46-4. It's not the type of work that personally I would be looking for to go into the Belmont Stakes. But he's here. If he was based in Kentucky. The other option is the Ohio Derby, as we talked about before you went on. Isn't it a shorter ship to go to Thistledown from Churchill Downs than it is from Belmont Park? Yes. Granted, you have 3 weeks. Robertino Diodoro, his trainer, is not here. He's going to go by what his assistant, Sean Williams, took a video of the work and sent it to him. And he's Robertino's in Dallas today for those races at Lone Star. He's going to huddle up with his owners and make a decision. If you listen to Sean Williams, the assistant, he'd like to go. He's here, let's run. If he does run, I guess the thing, one feather in his cap, he'd be the only horse to run in all three races. Some research that I did, again, aside from the Triple Crown horses, horses that have run in the Triple Crown, the last time that a horse who lost two of the Triple Crown races and then won the Belmont is Victory Gallop.
Look at you.
Look at me. How about that?
How about, and I'm going to trot this here, back out. This is great. This is our listener, Ryan Roshaw, who came up with this, that if Keep Me in Mind doesn't participate, that the last time that we didn't have a single horse run in all three races, you got to go back to 2010.
Okay. And again, you know, right. And I think part of that, you know, I don't know. I don't have the answer to that question. I'm not going to get into a discussion about changing the Triple Crown. Me personally, I would have changed it years ago, just because I think it makes the races way more competitive. And this is before the two Triple Crown winners. I'm not trying to make it easier.
Yep.
I'm not trying to make it harder. I'm trying to make them more competitive and more meaningful.
There you go.
So that's just me. I don't really want to get into all that, but that, you know, that's my soapbox for that particular issue. But yeah, if Keep Me In Mind doesn't run, then we won't have – it'll be the first time since 10 that you don't have a horse run in all three Triple Crown races, which is a shame because these are supposed to be the three races. It's called the Triple Crown Trail. Start just calling it the Kentucky Derby Trail because that we want to get to the Derby, and once the 18 or 19 horses lose the Derby, most of them scatter and point for other races. Some here and some to the summer.
That's a fair point, and absolutely worth further exploration and discussion.
And maybe we can talk to the people who run the Triple. Oh wait, there is nobody who runs the Triple Crown. Sorry.
Well, I was going to make that suggestion, or at least float that and say why, you know, with all of the sponsorship opportunities out there, and we've got plenty of advertisers. It's not like we don't have advertisers that that are backing the America's Day at the Races show and all, you know, there's tons of them. We can't get somebody. They can do insurance, or they can find some way to agglomerate. Let's get a Triple Crown bonus back again, and system.
I'm not high on that only because I think the reason that it got done away with is because you have horses that just by two or three horses that run in the race. They run seventh, ninth, and third, and we're rewarding them we're giving them a participation trophy. I think the races should stand alone on their own merit. Now, maybe a little purse bump, but the Derby's $3 million, the Preakness is $1 million, and the Belmont's $1.5 million, which I guess a couple of years ago went up by $500,000. But these races could go up a little bit. I think more money, more payoff slots. Maybe it has become a financial burden to run in the Kentucky Derby. To be honest with you, if you're not in the top five, you're losing money, no question, and a lot of it.
No, especially if you bring a big group and then right. With the tickets and the you're not the first person to say that. And in fact, was it 2 years ago, there had been a discussion that was coming out of Lexington about urging and cajoling Churchill to make the Derby purse substantial and to put it, considering its level of importance, worldwide, that why isn't the purse
$5 million
at least? Yeah, that, and I don't know what that. I think the pandemic interrupted that conversation point.
That's interrupted a lot of things. But
that's true.
Just these purses could be bigger. And I just think the races, they should be the three, and I guess the Travers being the fourth. The races that you really want as a three or really want to be in and win and. It doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, you could also fold in Haskell and Travers and have a season long kind of a 3 year old something.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll come back around to Monmouth in a second, actually. And in fact, Marcus Hirsch, who's here somewhere.
He's here. He's on the ground.
Yeah. So we're going to, and he's on the other side. So he said he didn't think he could come over to sit, but later we'll talk to Marcus in the next probably 20, 25 minutes. He covered, basically did the coverage of opening weekend at Monmouth, and certainly it was top of mind with a lot of people. It was closely watched. And did you watch any?
I watched I just wanted to make sure that when they ran the first race at Monmouth that the world didn't end, because I had a lot of stories to write and I didn't want to have to just, not write them if the world's over. So the world didn't end.
If racing came to a conclusion.
The world didn't end, so I just said, okay, I just need to carry on. So I watched a few races. I didn't see anything egregious. I didn't watch every head-on and every replay of horses that, it certainly didn't favor the races that I saw a certain particular style.
No.
Which is not to say, Steve, that I'm in favor of the rule.
Yes,
I'm not.
I understand.
But it just didn't bring the world to a closure.
We'll get some thoughts from Marcus on that topic. Let's run down this Belmont field as we know as right now. And, of course, your Preakness winner leads this group. And, you know, the unusual, there's another research project. When was the last time we had a, I suppose, this is easy?
You're going to tee me up here, aren't you?
Go ahead.
Ask the question.
Who was the last jock to get off of a Preakness winner?
That was a different one.
What were you going for?
I was going for the last horse to not run the Kentucky Derby, in the Kentucky Derby,
right,
and win the Belmont Preakness.
I think I heard this last week.
Hillary, 1922.
Oh, my God. No, I did not hear that this week then. I heard something else, some variation on that. Hillary.
There are horses who have lost the Derby and won the next, too.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about not run in the Derby and won the next.
Oh, that's wild.
There are a lot of horses that have not run, that have not won and won the next two, but not run and won the next two.
I love it.
Hillary, 1922, 100 years ago.
Well done. The other issue here is, of course, win in the Preakness and a jock jumping ship.
I mean, I guess it's Calvin getting off flying that bird and riding Rachel Alexandra. Yeah. And I think this was pretty much, you know, in talking to Doug O'Neill yesterday, it sounded like this was pretty much a done deal. The Monday after the Derby, he had gotten a commitment from, I guess it's Brad Pegram now, is Flavian's agent, and they said we're riding you in the Belmont. And then Doug asked him again when he saw that Flavian had a mount in the Preakness. And he said, "Doesn't matter, we're good."
Wow.
And then Doug saw that Flavian won the Preakness and talked to Brad again on Monday after the Preakness and said, "Don't worry, we're good." So, kudos to Pegram and Flavian for keeping their word. It just sort of put him in a little bit of an awkward spot if Michael McCarthy, if what Michael McCarthy's saying is accurate, and I have no reason to doubt what he's saying, is it might have been a good idea just to inform him of that after the Preakness and say, you know, 2 days later and say, "Hey, you know, I did this and we're going to stick with this." But that didn't sound like it was the case. But they got a pretty good replacement.
You would think. And, of course, Johnny, given Johnny's association with the Pletcher Barn and Michael McCarthy's association and longstanding career period.
Kevin Bacon will play Michael McCarthy in the movie of Rumbauer, because it's just 6 degrees of, it's all kinds of separation. It's all kinds of.
That's great. Johnny, absolutely appropriate. And, you know, for this, you know, as we talk so often, Richard McLeori later, and I'm sure Rich will talk about, you know, stylistically approaching this race, you know, the galloper style, you know, the, you know, extended one-paced approach has always worked well at this, in this event. And Rombauer, you know, he certainly came with a run in the Preakness, but it just feels like Johnny will get him maybe out of positioned a little earlier and maybe a little bit more forward, you know, given the slower pace that you would anticipate in here.
Yeah, I would anticipate maybe a similar, you know, third, 2.5 to 3 lengths that he was off in the Bluegrass. But that was, you know, when they went 48-1, and then they sort of picked it up. Here they go. Yeah, it's the type of, that's the kind of pace you're going to perhaps see in the Belmont. And I'd see, you know, if Rocky World breaks this time, he would be out front. I could see Hot Rod Charlie sitting second, and I could see Rumbauer as, you know, potentially getting into that third slot. I could even see, you know, I think that helps a horse like Known Agenda also, who, you know, could get a bit more closer to the leaders than he was in the Derby. So, I think it's, I think that style will do it. And the one thing, even talking to Michael McCarthy prior to the Preakness, the one thing he was confident in about the horse is his ability to get a distance of ground, which he showed in the mile and 3/16, and which I believe he feels confident about at the mile and a half.
And Johnny would be looking for his third Belmont win. And it actually, I didn't realize it went this far back, but Union Rags actually, his last one for Mrs. Wyeth and Michael Matz, 2012. And then before that, who was the other one?
Rags to Riches.
Oh, of course, Rags to Riches, which he picked up, as a, that was a last minute.
It was a Gomez
yes, yeah.
Heartspun or somebody?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Exactly. So Johnny with a chance for a.
And this will be his 25th Preakness.
Wow.
I'm sorry, Belmont, no.
How about that? So Ron Bauer, you mentioned Hot Rod Charlie, and there's Pratt, Rock Your World, Joel Rosario back aboard, and that gets us to the trio of Pletcher runners, and Known Agenda with Arad, and Bourbonic Kendrick, and Overtook with Manny Franco.
Yes, who's the reigning Belmont Stakes winner. He won on Tis the Law last
year. Right. That's right. That's right. Good point.
And then you have, I think, I don't know if we missed him at all, but Essential Quality, who I do believe will be the favorite over Ron Bauer.
You think so, huh? Yeah.
I do believe
all right.
will be the favorite.
Makes sense, I guess.
Was the favorite in the Kentucky Derby. It had been favored in every race except the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, where Jackie's Warrior somehow went off the favorite. Essential Quality, you know, visually to me, that workout the other day looked similar to how he worked prior to the Kentucky Derby, which gets him in the mix, but does it get him to, you know, do you want to take a price? Brad Cox is a lot more confident about this horse's ability to go a mile and a half than I am. But now I know there's that Tappet influence, and Tappet has sired three Belmont winners. I get that, but I don't know. I'm not sure I want to take. I'm a big Essential Quality fan. I really do like Essential Quality a lot as a racehorse. I just don't know if I like him at a 3-1 in the Belmont Stakes. Now, I did talk to one thing I did. Luis Saez did. Yeah. I talked to him the other day, and he did say he thought that that bump out of the gate was a lot more serious than maybe it's been made up to be. He said he thought the horse was bothered by it physically, and that's why he was sort of getting out a little bit. So if that's the case, Brad seems to have downplayed that. He hasn't really talked about that. But Luis Saez thinks that that bump really bothered Essential Quality. And so you could make a case, if that's true, that to come within a length of winning that race off of maybe not being, 100% after that bump out of the gate, picks him up a little bit. But I don't know. I still have a little bit of a question mark at him at a mile and a half as the favorite.
I don't disagree at all. Then the two international flavors, Rebels Romance and France Go to Ina.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to do with either one of them. Rebels Romance is a nice record. His race in the UA Derby was visually good. I don't know what he beat. I do know one horse that he beat was France Godina, who was 17th.
Right.
I'm sorry, 7th in the UA Derby, and then 7th in the Preakness with, kind of an odd trip. He was like rushed up there and then kind of fell back.
Do we have? On my notes, I don't have riding assignments.
Santana rides France Godina. And Mike Smith rides Rebels Romance.
Thank you.
And if Keep Me in Mind runs, David Cohen will ride.
Right. And there's nobody else left, right? I mean, the Promise Keepers of the world and Dynamic One and Wayburn and...
I don't have any of those on my radar. I have meant to just ask Jimmy Jerkins about it because they've talked about going to the Pegasus. You run against Mandaloon for $150,000 there, or do you stay home and run in this race? So I do, in fact, after I leave you, I'm just going to double check. I could also potentially see that horse running in the Woody Stevens. It's not coming up a big field. It's coming up a good field, but it's not coming up a big field. And they have talked about this horse as being a little bit peculiar and wanting to be around his surroundings. So I'm interested to see if that horse might maybe stay here.
That's why I kept him on the possible.
I don't have him
the
as
possible.
A Belmont horse. Now Jose Ortiz with Brooklyn Strong not running, Jose Ortiz is now open if you want to make that move.
Interesting.
Do you make a move do you run a horse in a race just because you can get a good rider? To me, no. The thought. If I'm not thinking of running in the race,
no.
I don't say, oh well, this guy's open.
Let's run because we can get him.
A good rider.
Okay, fair point. So. And on that, before I ask you about the rest, you mentioned the rest of the card. Before we touch on a couple of, there will be 8 grade ones. Yesterday's no call in the nightcap. I'm curious. What was your take?
I thought it happened late enough in the race where it wasn't going to. I know that there were some people on the social media world that thought he was going to go by. I was not one of them. I didn't think. I didn't have to look at my program to see who the rider was involved in that race.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it happened late enough that I didn't think it was going to affect the outcome.
Fair enough. I just was curious. I mean, because I also got some feedback that the stewards up there seemed to let IRAD get away with almost anything.
I don't know. I've never really tried to delve into the minds of stewards who like have this favoritism for a certain trainer or rider. It is the, you know, I'm not as big a conspiracy theorist as maybe I once was. Maybe I got the New York Post out of me, but to me, that's giving a little bit more credit for people thinking a little stronger about things than exist. That's just me, but I mean, maybe the guy's involved in a lot of them because he's in 1, 2, 3 in so many races, because he's riding the horse that are supposed to be 1, 2, 3. In
no, those races. That's fair. And I also will remind everybody who call them the Naira stewards. They're stewards at the Naira tracks. One is placed in the stand by Naira. One is placed by the Jockey Club, and one is placed by the New York Gaming Commission. There's three separate entities represented on that panel of judges on the roof of the building. Dave Greinig with us as we open the salvos here at Belmont Park, where at least the wind has died down. It is New York Showcase Day and Memorial Day. There's another trivia question. And by the way, thanks to author Jennifer Kelly, who delineates. And here's why Pillory's name did come up. That was the last time that the Preakness and Derby were run on the same day. Contributing to the and the Derby in 1922 was not really as heralded, and it was big. It was a nice race for the middle America portion.
So I guess that's why then you couldn't win the Preakness. You had to skip the Derby. Okay.
Exactly. As did Man of War 2 years earlier. Stay
still
east.
Like crab cakes for better than the Burgoo.
Which is a good choice.
Exactly.
We completely concur on that. When was the last time we had Memorial Day the same week as Belmont?
I'm going to say the year Tonalist won.
I was going to say that it even went back maybe even a little further. I thought that I'll Have Another's year was I don't know if that was the last time, but I something in the back of my mind kept telling me this week when I was thinking about it, and I don't have the dates. I don't have the media guy near me, but that was in the period of time that I've been broadcasting Belmont Week. It's happened, which is 16 years essentially, 15 years. I think it's happened twice, but I'm not. I can remember.
I mean, does it make sense that it would be June? I mean, Smarty Jones' year would be June 5th, I believe. That was this is Belmont's on June 5th, right? And I believe in 2004 when Smarty Jones was going for the Triple Crown,
that would make sense.
So I would imagine that if it's whenever years the Belmont was run on June 5th, it would seem to be that Memorial Day.
Well
would be
done.
Run. So that's going back to 2004. I'm sure it's happened again, sometime in between those two times. And I believe I only kind of remember that because for some reason I remember that Ronald Reagan died on the day Smarty Jones.
Famous. Right? Well, and that's also, I think that's also Andy's birthday. I think it's Andy Serling's birthday.
That I did not know.
Well, come on.
I didn't get the invite to the birthday.
I bring this up because, of course, a lot of people will never seem to get over that the Met Mile isn't run today, but they are going to run it Saturday. A couple of thoughts about the way the rest of the 8 Grade 1 day is shaping up.
The Met Mile has picked up a newcomer over the weekend.
Yes, by my standards.
I guess they're going to take a shot looking for the Grade 1, so he will not run in Texas today. You've got Mischievous Alex, who worked yesterday at Gulfstream, coming up. I believe he's traveling today. You got Nick's Go. Silver State, who's won five in a row for Asmussen.
Turning back.
Dr. Post and the always dangerous Calumet Farm. I believe Lexingtonian, I believe, is coming for that race.
Yeah, Jack said he was doing this.
I am waiting. Diamond Oops is either here or Jiper.
Sure.
So I need to get a hold of Mr. Biancone to see what he's going to run in. New York Traffic is nominated, but Safi indicated to me they're going to go to the Salvatore Mile at
Monmouth.
So that race, look, I saw somebody, Matt Bernier tweeted something yesterday, and I didn't answer him, but it was one of those, like, what race aside of the Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup is the most prestigious race in America? And to me, it's a no-brainer. It's the Met Mile.
Oh, no doubt about it.
Never comes up a bad race.
No.
And it's got a lot of meaning in terms for the breeding shed, in terms of, you know, championships too, and it's just a fabulous race year in and year out. And it was the first race that I covered for New York Racing in the year Holy Bull won it. So
nice.
This might have been this day. Today's May 31st, right? So
yes.
This is how about that? Today's 30 years. I started covering horse racing 30 years ago today.
For the Bergen Record?
The Trentonian.
So how about that? Why do I always say the Bergen Record? That's like locked in my head.
It was May 30th because I have a feeling the date of the paper was May 31st. But it's Memorial Day 1994. 1994 is when I started in New York. I started covering horse racing in July of 91. So it would be covering New York racing 27 years.
Wow. I love it. Was that your first major byline? That
was my first byline in the Post was Holy Bull winning the Met Mile.
Nice. I love it.
So you want to talk about some other races?
Manhattan,
if you like the the race at Churchill Downs, you should like the Manhattan because you've got domestic spending and Colonel Liam matching back up again. You got Channel Cat supposed to come, I believe, who just won the Man of War here. Gufo, Master of Foxhounds, Masterpiece, Rock Emperor, and Grand Motion's looking at maybe Bye-Bye Melvin. So that race, will, again, it's come up. You know, I guess the mile and a quarter will sort of determine plans for the likes of Colonel Liam and domestic spending. How about the Ogden Phipps? If you like the Apple Blossom, you should like the Ogden Phipps. Swiss Skydiver and Latruska are going to go at each other again.
Nice.
She Dares the Devil for Mr. Cox. I believe he's sending Bonnie South here as well. Miss Marissa, Queen Nakia, Valiance, who's been training very well for her return off the runner-up in the Breeders' Cup, and then Water White, a horse who I kind of like. I just don't know if I like in this spot. How about another one? The Acorn, Day Out of the Office. Obligatory search results and travel column had that list. Miss Brazil, I believe, is also going to run, and Ava's Grace. The Just the Game, you're going to have some international flair there with Charles Appleby's Summer Romance and Althika.
Nice.
You're going to have the Chad Brown influence with Blowout and Pocket Square and Tama here, waiting for a word from Brendan Walsh on Zofel. Oh, yeah, how about another great one? The Woody Stevens, Jackie's Warrior, and Dream Shake, Drain the Clock, Nova Rags, and by the way, let's get this in. How about congratulations to Cherie DeVoe for getting her first graded stakes win? She's going to look for another one with Tulane Tryst.
She is on her way to New York right now, actually. Otherwise, Cherie would have been with us. And as it happens, it was, I believe, 3 years ago right now, today, that she sat with me having just gone out on her own. And we had like an hour-long kind of career introduction and you know, talking about her time with Chuck Simon and of course her family back upstate and her her long association around the harness side and then of course the tutorial in the Chad Brown barn for several years. And so excited as can be, Cherie will be here live tomorrow.
All right, and then lastly in the Jiper, you have the females Got Stormy and Alexandra. Alexandra, who won this race last year, got hurt in the race, but she won it. Hasn't won since. She's going to go for a repeat, and then the fellow female, Got Stormy, will also be in there, taking on a host of boys, including, believe, Casa Cree, Bound for Nowhere, Stubbins, and Front Run the Fed, and Gregorian Chant. It's going to be
that one's
going to be a very interesting race. And then, the Grade 2 Brooklyn will have, I believe, Lone Rock, Max Player, Rocketry, Tis a Magician and Campaign are the ones that I'm looking at in those races.
Outstanding. And we'll obviously have the fields later tomorrow. This afternoon, right?
Tuesday for those races that we just talked about. And then, yes, this afternoon they draw the New York, which is coming up very solid as well, and the True North and the five Friday stakes races. The New York, I think, I got to confirm with Graham, but I think Meet Mary is supposed to come back to defend her title, even though he ran her in the race at Pimlico sort of as a way to get her year started.
The Gallarette.
Gallarette. He did not rule out at that time running back in here, and now I'm hearing that he is. You have a couple of horses that are going for some Naira bonus money here. If you won one of those three-year-old turf stakes last year, like Magic Attitude and Antoinette had won, there's a bonus. I believe it's $300,000 for the owner and $35,000 for the trainer.
Wow.
If you come back and are able to win the New York. They announced that several months ago, and that's I just don't have the exact. I believe it's $300,000 for the owner and $35,000 for the trainer, and there happen to be two horses that are only there are only two horses that are eligible for it, and they both believe are running in it. Antoinette, who might be in deep water, but Magic Attitude, Magic Attitude is a big shot. That's
absolutely what a nice. That's a nice. There should be more of that. That kind of concept is has proven successful. Well, this shapes up great, and for those that haven't looked ahead to Thursday, I mentioned the Intercontinental and the Wonder Again. The Wonder Again came up terrific with a pack of 10, including some familiar names. Chad's got a pair, Christoph's got a pair, Todd's got a pair, Eclipse has got a pair. I mean, it's a really interesting set that came together for the Wonder Again. The three-year-old fillies never disappoint. Mile and an eighth inner turf, and on the Widener 7/8 for the Intercontinental. She was wonderful. Two MTOs. And then the Astoria, the two-year-old race, the repurposed Astoria with a six-pack of two-year-old fillies.
Including Mainstay, a half-sister to Vequist.
That's right.
For Butch Reed, is also making her first start in this spot. Now, Vequist did win a stakes race to break her maiden, so it was a little bit more prestigious in the spinaway, but this one here, he talked to Butch a little bit yesterday because he won the stage.
Yeah,
at Barron.
Barron crushed.
And he mentioned that this one is more of a sprinter type, whereas Vequis is more of a long distance type. So, yeah. Or a route horse. So we'll see how it works out.
And she Vequis on her way back, targeting summer.
Yeah, he mentioned the Cotillion as a race that's the goal. With there'll be some start before then. I know they have a prep sort of at Parks. The only problem with the Parks preps, they're usually around Labor Day, so the turnaround is quick.
Yeah.
I could see her running in something not whatever that race is. I could see her running in something in Saratoga, perhaps.
Yeah.
Some
listed thing or as a way to edge back. Well, we jumped in feet first. Dave Grenig, outstanding start, and I'm gonna have to put the over-under on slices at King Umberto's without Jay on hand. We're going to have to make you or Marcus or Mike Welsh. Who should be the?
I think it's going to be just take the under because the one key handicapping angle to that is the fact that Memorial Day being today would have been a key King Umberto's day.
Yes,
but now with six stakes races,
that's true. You're locked in. That's a good point.
That's going to definitely
Tuesday, Wednesday only.
Tuesday, Wednesday have big shots. Although tomorrow's the draw, so unless they should just have I really should, instead of going to City Field, which they're not doing, they're doing it right here. But they should really just have to draw King Umberto's.
So, the new 10 in that big,
beautiful.
Oh, my God. That's a huge idea. I'll talk to Rosario and Giro later.
And Pans and O'Rourke.
And Pat. Yeah, Pat McKenna makes all the decisions here. Who are you kidding?
Right.
Dave Grenig, everybody. Dave, this was fabulous. Thank you. Dave Grenig, everybody. And Marcus Hirsch is somewhere on the grounds in town to cover the Belmont Stakes. But we're not going to talk that yet with Marcus. Marcus, good morning. Welcome to New York.
Hi, Steve. How are you? Thank you.
Marcus, I saw that you drew the coverage assignment for the start of the Monmouth season, and you were terrific. You had a very thoughtful approach discussing it, and what were your early impressions?
Well, I mean, I'm afraid of saying anything, really. I think people are so up in arms about this thing. It's like, it's really become a trigger point. I'm not really afraid of saying anything. My opinion is that I thought the racing was fine, cropless over the 3 days that I've seen so far. I would have no complaints at all. I didn't see, I mean, there were no incidents that I see. I've seen people saying that horses were all over the track and this and that, but I didn't notice that at all. Let's see. It's different, and I think you're seeing that some horses, you know, they need more encouragement than others, but that's just part of the sorting out of things. You know, some horses respond to the whip, some horses don't. Just like some horses don't need a whip, and some horses might to, like, go as fast as they possibly can. But, you know, I did yesterday, I think the primary thing to address is the whole safety concern, because that's been a linchpin of the argument coming from the Jockeys Guild and a large set of jockeys, too, that this was going to be something that was terribly unsafe for riders, which I had a hard time. I get what people were saying, like there are instances where you do need to employ the whip, and I think that it's better that jockeys carry whips for sure. That people were talking about, like, going through holes and being afraid to use it because you're going to get fined, or just, you know, control issues. But I didn't really, like, I couldn't imagine that the stewards or the track were going to put the riders in the position where they felt worried about using the crop for safety because of a fine. And what I've, you know, been given to understand is that is the case. No one's going to try to put a jockey in a spot where they can't use the whip if they feel like they need to ensure safe racing. The rule that came down from the Racing Commission, you know, said that you could only use the whip for safety, but it didn't give any more details than that, and also, disappointingly, didn't outline any manner for implementation, the way that, you know, people would get together and meet. It was always going to be complicated the way that this was introduced and brought into force at this meet, since it's such a, you know, radical step compared to the status quo. So given that, I mean, my hope was that the stewards and the jockeys would, you know, work as a team to try to figure it out. And I talked to Jose Ferrer for quite a while yesterday morning, who's been riding there this week. Been riding for 37 years. He's certainly experienced. He said that had been the way that things were working out. The stewards had, met with all the jockeys before the meet started. And, you know, no one feels, from what Jose said, no one in the room feels like they can't do what they need to do to protect themselves. Like, I know a lot of people didn't carry the crop on the first day, and Ferrer was one of those people, but he said after one race he started carrying it again. There's an adjustment period for everyone. It's a different kind of riding. I think that in a perfect world, you might have some sort of moderation from this extreme. But I thought all things considered, it looked fine to me. I have different tastes than some people. I didn't, you know, the safety thing looked fine. The racing was like 50% favorites won. Different running styles were successful over the 3 days. I thought, you know, all things considered, it was kind of much to do about nothing.
It very well may, you know, turn out that way when, you know, when the dust settles. If I saw on my screen, on my split screen, watching on RTN, if a race, if it was post time and I wasn't watching Belmont and Churchill, I'd switch and pull the race up and just kind of watched and took it in. And I have, you know, sort of the same takeaway that it you know, aesthetically, it's a little unusual. I did get a comment from a player, and I wanted to ask you about the handle as well. But did get an interesting comment from a player, and I really should see who it was. He said he watched head-ons. He said he did not see horses wandering around, and that they held their course pretty well.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I thought that. You know, instead of flailing away and interrupting.
You know, I mean, there's something to be said for two hands on the wheel, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, okay, I mean, I do think that I see a lot of, I mean, this is just my opinion. I see a lot of riders become unbalanced and get out of rhythm with their mount when they try to go to the cross,
yes,
which is what they're supposed to do. I think that a lot of people are better suited by focusing on getting in the rhythm with the horse and, you know, using their hands more. Some horses it's not going to work that well with, but a lot of horses I think are capable of doing it. And I think we saw over this weekend that the horses know what they're doing out there. I mean, they need guidance. But I think a key thing that Ferrer pointed out is that the whip is seen too much as this instrument of abuse. And it can be, but what it also is like an extension of a jockey's hand. And it's a means of communicating with the animal, and just like the reins, it doesn't have to be used in an abusive manner at all. The tapping, you know, the tapping on the shoulder and the gentle prodding and the showing, that stuff is all horsemanship. That's not beating. That does not need to be eliminated from the game, even if we're talking about, like, major whip reform. I think all of that is perfectly acceptable. And what this experiment is going to do is just open things up to a wider perspective, because we haven't had anything like this before. And I think it's useful in, I mean, there's obviously a major movement afoot here. And, you know, there's coming supposedly federal oversight, and there's a lot of talk about national regulation. So I think that, I mean, this is one potentially very useful step in formulating a policy that everyone can be satisfied with. I will say also, on the one dry track day on Friday, I mean, it kept being proposed to me that front runners were going to be at an advantage without crop, because you needed to stoke up a closer, you know, with a whip. And I just didn't get that at all. And I think it's just the opposite. I think the horses that need the most encouragement are the ones that just go out and run as fast as they can and don't. They're not thinking competitively so much as just running. Those horses were slowing down and not without being whipped in the stretch. They were being overtaken on Friday every race. And the horses that had a target and were racing competitively, trying to pass the target, those were the ones that seemed more inclined to be able to do this with a hand ride. And when we get back to dry track racing there, I mean, I think, you know, it got so wet and with speed was very good in certain situations for a couple of days, especially yesterday. But when we get back to dry track racing, I'm handicapping for horses that are coming from mid-pack or farther behind. And you know what, Steve? I think that there is nothing wrong with that. American dirt racing can become tedious at times. We have a lot of parade races where speed dominates and they just run around the track in the same way. To me, it would be an enhancement of the product in the long run if there was a change, a shift in that dynamic, and stalkers and closers had more, you know, a greater chance to get the job done, just makes for a more interesting and exciting product, I think.
Yeah, really well framed, and I appreciate it, Marcus, because I saw your piece last week leading in, and you know, knew you'd watch closely, and you know, the conversation with Farrar contributes the reporting, and I didn't want the morning to go by too quickly without this discussion. And I should also mention that you had even with the off the turf action, you had a nice clean sweep in the weekend game plan.
Yeah, I mean, I liked Sainthood on turf. I didn't even like him that much on dirt. He was a super short price. And Cellist in the Audubon, he got pounded in the wagering.
Yep,
I thought he'd be 7-2, 4-1. I think he's a nice horse. He ran well. And then Wind of Change for Sappy Joseph. He, I thought all he needed to do was get out of the gate, but he ran really well. I mean, Safi Joseph has like 50 stalls at Monmouth. There are a lot of athletes in the 60. There are a lot of big new outfits there. I think they're set up to have a decent meet. I just want to make something clear about Ferrer. You know that he doesn't like the rule, and I don't think anybody there really. I don't think anyone is itching to go whipless. I think people are willing to adapt, but they want to be able to use the crop as a steering tool, as a guiding tool, and to use it within reasonable bounds where it's not being seen as excessive or abusive by anyone who's watching the sport. And I also, just for myself, I also want to make it abundantly clear that, again, safety is paramount in all of this. If anyone ever was put in a position where they felt unsafe, that would be cause for, you know, extreme outcry among any participant, anyone associated with racing who cares about the sport and the welfare of its participants at all. You know, so if you say, like, I think this is okay, I think it's working out all right, it doesn't mean that you want anyone to ever be endangered. And jockeys, obviously, they have the primary voice. They're the ones that are doing the job and that are, you know, we have to count on them to communicate honestly and in good faith about what's going on. And, you know, I don't want that to be obscured at all. I mean, I just think that there's this weird divide going on where if you express any support for, like, whip reform or even what Mom is doing and say that, you know, let's see how it goes, let's hope that it's managed properly, that you're against jockeys. And I don't think that it's black and white like that at all.
No, no doubt. And it's seemingly an important discussion and experiment at this point to have, given the landscape that we're facing collectively.
Well, absolutely. I mean, people want to get up in arms about wokeness and PETA and, you know, commissions and authorities and tracks being pushed into things that they don't want to do. But I don't think there's any question that racing is facing a reckoning on a lot of levels right now. And that the public-facing nature of the sport is important if you want to have a viable sport. And I'm sorry, it's not, you know, it's not early 20th century semi-agrarian America anymore. People have generally different ideas about animals, the way animals are treated, the way humans interact with animals. Now, they might not know what it's like to be around animals the way that racing people do. And it's fair to say that outsiders, you know, it's difficult for them to dictate policy. But at the same time, you know, the sport has to exist in this ecosystem. And I don't think there's any question that the ecosystem demands change and that racing will benefit from accommodating these ideas as best that it can, as best it can, in the safest way possible, and also supporting, you know, the core, its core customer, the gambler.
Let's, in fact, on that topic, 2.6 million yesterday, 3 million on Saturday, and seemingly in line with 2019, you know, comparisons.
Yeah, the two Saturdays in 2019 that I thought were most comparable, it was, they were down a little from that. Less so, I looked at the simulcast handle because I didn't think On Track was very fair.
Right.
But with the sloppy track and off turf on Saturday and Sunday and the short field big favorites, I think you could account for some of the decline. I'm sure that some people are people who, you know, if you're wagering big money and are heavily invested, you want to have, I mean, you don't want unknown variables, obviously. So I would expect that some people would pull back their action, definitely. But for me, I'm more concerned about this Lasix on, Lasix off, and never knowing what a horse is going to do as far as EIPH than the crop. That's just me.
Well, you're not wrong to identify that as you know, a more difficult issue to manage from a player standpoint. Well, we will continue to monitor it. I really appreciate this, Marcus. Stay with me for just a couple of minutes because I got two quick hits for you. I don't know if you were traveling here. I don't know if you saw the piece that Bob Kiekhoffer wrote about pressure on the government in Illinois on Springfield toward Arlington. But
did not.
I'll send you the link when you get a chance. Well, maybe we'll, you know, it's not a priority this week, but there's some work being done by, you know, former governor Jim Edgar, who, you know, has been associated with the game, and they're going to try to see if Springfield can't intercede here on behalf of Arlington. So we'll see.
I'd be a little skeptical.
You're skeptical. I hear you. Some overview from you on this week and on Belmont. When was the last time you were here for a Belmont?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. Okay. Some thoughts going in as we pray for sunshine.
It's going to be spectacular racing. I mean, yeah. There are so many really interesting races, and the forecast has improved a lot over the last couple of days. The last I saw this morning was on the rain days, I guess it's Thursday into Friday. I only saw it down to a 40% chance here at Belmont, and not especially heavy rainfall totals if it does rain. We'll see. I mean, the earlier forecast looked horrible, but, you know, I think that the races are going to be able to keep them on. It's just a question of how wet it's going to be. And if there's a little rain Thursday and Friday, probably good to yielding or something for Saturday. Friday's course, you know, course on Friday could be pretty wet, but Manhattan, you know, looks spectacular to me. It's one of the races I'm covering, and I'm very much looking forward to that race.
What? In fact, let me make a note. What are you covering?
I'm covering the Intercontinental on Thursday, the Gold Cup on Friday, and the Manhattan, and the Just a Game on Saturday. The Manhattan is a rematch between the tie and the Turf Classic. Currently in the domestic spending, and the wonderful Gouffo, a host of others. Really good race.
Very much. Nice. All right. So I'm going to that'll use that. And Dave gave us the overview as well of all the how the fields are shaping up elsewhere. Your early thoughts about the Belmont field specifically.
Well, I think it's limited number of real contenders. I'd say maybe four. I'm not digging too deep. I really like the way Hot Rod Charlie has been training. He looks even better to me than he did going into the Derby. I thought he'd win the Derby. I especially thought he'd win the Derby at the quarter pole. I can't believe he lost. It's going to be fascinating to see what Rock Your World can do with a clean trip. He looks like the right type of horse with a strong, sustained pace, the galloper. He could be really effective. And essential quality, you know, again, he's not a cut above everyone else. But if you look at how much ground he lost in the Derby, and it was really a lot of ground, compared especially to, say, Hot Rod Charlie, who hugged the rail around the whole turn while essential quality was hung out really wide. Another horse with a stride that looks like he might really suit gentle turn and a mile and a half. I think it's going to be a really interesting race.
Marcus, before I let you go, and I appreciate the extra time, I promised you 10. And
no worries.
I've taken 20. Rebel's Romance, you know, given your international interests and, you know, the coverage you provided for the World Cup, some thoughts about him and his potential in here.
Yeah, I think he's worth considering. I mean, it's hard to trust anything that happens in the UAE Derby after what we've seen in the past with Mendelsohn and horses like that. But I do think he has a touch of quality. I don't think he's like a super, super high level winner of that race. He he was a little he was a little disappointing in Saudi Arabia. I think he probably stays. I mean, I was hoping to speak to the trainer about him. I haven't been able to reach him yet, but I think he's here. I think he's here with good intention, and he's capable. I'd be surprised if he were able to win, but I wouldn't be surprised if he gave a good accounting of himself.
I'm in that same frame of mind, and I really liked that work last week from him as well. Marcus Hirsch, everybody, DRF Hirsch on the grounds at Belmont Park with Mike Welch and Dave Grenig, and we're all missing Jay here. Marcus, thank you so much. I'll see you probably later today.
My pleasure.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody, with really thoughtful approach to the situation at Monmouth and handling the lead coverage down there. We've got tons to do, and we're going to spend the next little while with Rich Migliori. I wish I was going to tell you that Rich will be sitting across from me, but he's got the late shift today on America's Day at the Races on Fox, and there'll be terrific coverage today, and I think they're sticking around for the California racing, if I'm not mistaken. I'll get the lineup. Should be great. It's Memorial Day. Let me also get that acknowledgement in. I hope you saw yesterday's. I guess I could have waited until today to post it, but knowing that I was going to be at Belmont, I wanted to get it out there yesterday. On the grounds here, between the building, between the clubhouse and right where you walk in, if you were to walk into the building and then take a hard left, go down toward the racing office, there's a large flat stone with a plaque. And years ago, several years, I don't know when it was, I first noticed that. I walked by it a million times. And then one day I looked more closely and read it, and it was a monument, a memorial placed to the four chaplains. And I wanted people to be, I've done this now a few years in a row, I wanted people to be aware of what the four chaplains represents and who they were. And essentially they were four lieutenants, Methodist, Jewish, Catholic, and Dutch Reformed, Lieutenants Foxgood, Washington, and Poling, that gave up their life jackets to soldiers on February 4th, 1943, the stricken Dorchester. And they gave up their lives for four soldiers. And the Four Chaplains Foundation continues the work and spreads their message of sacrifice. So for everybody that sacrificed for us to enjoy what we have here, thank you. Break. Rich Migliori joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents